Coming up on this episode of the Star Wars Report, Teresa Delgado joins us. She's the fangirl next door. Also, we talk about Darth Maul. Is it actually Sam Witwer doing his voice? Maybe, maybe not. And George Lucas on Oprah. It's all coming up on the Star Wars Report. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Star Wars Report. My name is Riley Blanton, one of your hosts here this evening. This is the 31st episode of the Star Wars Report. I can't believe how many we've done, Bethany. And Bethany, by the way, welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Our co-host
glad
and my sister.
Here.
I'm so glad that you have joined us once again. And also joining us once again this week is Mr. Mark Herleman.
Hey! Sorry, Whistler can't make it. I totally left him behind in Echo Base. I just realized that. I'm out on home one. Virus took me out, but I'm still here. The data pad.
I'm remarkably surprised that you have survived, Mark.
Rise again, my friend.
Yes, I'm pleased and That's surprised, right. Pleasantly surprised. Joining us this week, a special guest host, and we're going to be interviewing her coming up in just a little bit, as I teased at the outside at the beginning of the show. Teresa Delgado. Did I pronounce your name correctly? I should ask.
Yes, you did.
That's something Yay. I should totally have asked you before I started the show live.
Oh, well, that's all right. At least you got it right.
At least I feel slightly better about myself. Now, we've actually, this is rare. I think, this is unprecedented. The first guest host that we've had who we've met in person before we met on the internet.
Wow. At least, yeah. That is cool.
Yeah.
And we did meet at a very cool convention, which is awesome. Yeah.
Yes, we met Teresa at Fan Days this past October in Dallas-Fort Worth greater area in Texas. Everything's bigger in Texas, as I say. So, a saying that I would definitely say is true after seeing that convention center. The giant sandcrawler, as they called it. That was
Which
awesome.
Is odd, because I had never been there before, and I walked up to it, and I was like, well, that looks familiar.
Hmm. Yes. Wow. Wow. Yeah. As we got some scratching issues, but I think we'll be able to power through. Bethany, would you monitor the Skype call, please?
Yes.
That would be awesome.
I will.
All right. So let's go ahead and let's get to it. We're going to go ahead and drop into our news segment. We're going to try something a little bit different this time. We kind of alluded to it. It was our practice run last week, but there's so much awesome news. That we can never always quite get to it, but we think that our listeners here on Middle Earth Network Radio and all of the podcast listeners deserve to know all the news. So we're going to try to jump through some of the highlights of stories that we've missed in past weeks, and we like to call it the Super Happy Fun Times Rapid Fire News Segment.
We have something to report.
Come closer, I have good news.
Data brought to us by the Bothan spies.
We can send a clear transmission.
There it is! Listen!
In a new article with IGN, it reports that the Old Republic costs almost $200 million, that's million with an M, to make. Now, if only they could use a tenth of that budget for the live-action series.
And also reporting from TheForce.net, we learn that best-selling authors Aaron Alston, Troy Denning, Drew Karpyshyn, John Jackson Miller, and Pablo Hidalgo and Timothy Zahn will be at Star Wars Celebration 6 coming in August, in Orlando. James Woo-hoo! Lucino also said that he would probably be able to make it to this celebration as well.
Dave Filoni announces that Cad Bane and Boba Fett in a new awesome art kind of artistic poster that he's selling for charity on eBay. You can find a link to it in our show notes.
Yeah, that thing has already
reached.
That
is a pretty cool poster.
It's already reached it 1,000.
It is a cool poster. I've seen it.
It's already reached over $1,000 in less than a day.
Wow, that's awesome. And of course, the saga continues.
No, George. You're the greatest threat to equanimity, peacefulness. You've carried on a feud for all these years. You can't just dissolve it in a matter of words. Retribution must be paid, George. I need retribution.
And a hint that the Shatner is coming back. Back in
wow.
black.
Wow, William Shatner.
Oh, And you guys know that there is a feud that goes on between Captain Kirk and Mr. Sulu. I mean, there's a serious feud there on top of it. I wonder if old Shatner thinks that Sulu, Mr. T'Kai, decided to jump ship and did the Clone Wars and sees that as like a, you know, you're a traitor. Wow, boy, Shatner, he's just keeping that blood feud going, ain't he?
Oh, goodness. And Sam Witwer is confirmed as Darth Maul in the Clone Wars? Possibly. It says so on his IMDb page. Perhaps they found our interview with him a while back from Dragon Con, where
maybe
he hinted at a very interesting character coming up in the Clone Wars that he voiced, but obviously couldn't give us the full details. And we don't want to get him fired, so we didn't ask him for any more. Also, Darth Maul's return to the Clone Wars. Actually, one of our writers, Pete, wrote a really awesome article about this, speculating how he returns and why, in what fashion and format, etc., etc., etc. And comments in the article are interesting. People are still hesitant about his return, but they're also really excited about it, too.
I'm really pumped about it, actually.
Yeah, I'm
genuinely super excited about this, and I really hope they tie it into the theatrical release. And that closes out that rapid fire news segment. Now that's how it's done, people. 6 minutes into the show. now we can get into some real stuff. But before we go any further, I want to talk about our sponsor for this episode, ToyHut.com. ToyHut.com is your place, the source. Awesome places to go get your Star Wars action figures. Bethany, do you have a pick of the week for us this week?
Actually, I have two. I figured I was all interested in this Darth Maul stuff, and I'd read multiple articles, including Pete's, and I was really excited about the return of Darth Maul, so I decided to search ToyHut.com for Darth Maul.
Okay.
And they came up with about 45 results, so I couldn't just kind of pick one. So I forced myself to go with only two, because the Sith, rule of two.
Wow.
Figured I could make an exception for one pick of the week. I really like this Star Wars Darth Maul Theed Hanger duel, and it has Maul without his heavy overcloak, and I've always liked his outfit, so I really like this, and it's just over $12. There's another one that has him with an overcloak and with a droid that's actually only about $8. Both of those will be in the show notes, but I really like them. And Toy Hut, you're going to make me spend money.
I know.
and you should too. Go to Toy Hut, buy yourself an awesome Darth Maul toy.
And be sure to let them know that when you go over there, go through the show notes for Star Wars Report episode 31. On the site. And Bethany, would you bring in our next news story?
Yes, but if those figures don't interest you, they have a wristwatch mall, a collectible malls, chocolate malls, hologram malls, malls with Sith infiltrator malls, and a puzzle mall signed by Ray Park himself, and it's mall everywhere.
Shopping
I was
malls.
Really excited about
chocolate should, malls is the best part.
Definitely go check that out. Yeah. You need to play up Darth Maul, have them buy stuff.
There you go.
Oh, goodness.
Bethany, you'll have to bring in the next story because I just realized that my show notes have kerplet.
Really?
Yeah.
This is the clips with Oprah, so that's actually not something I can do. But I'll move along. We did see another...
Well, really quick. Hey, Bethany, before we go any further, we should probably talk about Rock Buddies, since we said we were going to.
Yes, Rock Buddies. Okay. Who likes Rock Buddies? I'm now totally... in love with Rock Buddies, thanks to John Fish of the chat. We saw that StarWars.com has a blog that shows you how to make your own Star Wars Rock Buddies. And this is really amazing. For those of you who can't seem to keep any pet alive, even a fish, this is for you. I guarantee you like it. You can hover over them like Gollum and say, "My precious." I guarantee you'll have fun.
My precious Rock Buddies, I love them.
This is really amazing. For those of you who can't seem to keep any pet alive, even if
this is where we're holding the news to a stop right now.
Okay.
Oh, throwing a gear in the wrench or a hydro spanner into the gearworks. Oh no, the Millennium Falcon has just dropped out of hyperspace. What's going on in the back there, Riley?
I always love when this happens on live. However, I have my show notes back, Bethany, but what I want to do is
yes.
Talk about Star Wars Episode One: The Phantom Menace.
Indeed.
It's coming to theaters. I don't know if you guys have heard this.
Really?
You're gonna have to come out of the bathroom. I can't hear you. Get out of the bathroom.
Oh, there it is. There we go.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I get for muting
Thank
my
you.
Mic. Thanks, Mark. Yeah. Who's excited for the Phantom Menace? Anybody?
Yeah,
me.
This guy.
Me.
Okay. This guy.
Me.
All right.
One who will bring balance to the Force.
Experience the wonder.
You believe it's this boy?
And the adventure.
The Force is unusually strong with him.
On February 9th.
Just hang on.
Celebrate Star Wars for the first time in spectacular 3D.
At last, we will reveal ourselves to the Jedi.
Wipe them out. All of them.
No! Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, in 3D, in cinemas February 9.
Hey, and that's it. That's The Phantom Menace Episode 1. Bethany.
Yes.
I would love for you to lead the discussion.
Indeed, I will start off
of Star Wars Episode One. It's less than a month now till it comes up. While I queue up the Oprah clips and get past the obnoxious pre-roll ads.
Okay.
So if we're suddenly and rudely interrupted, you'll know why.
Teresa, how does The Phantom Menace fit in with your favorite Star Wars movies? Is it one that you really like or one that you don't like as much?
Well, the way I split up my favorites are my favorite from the
Oh, there she is. You'll have to repeat that, Teresa. We didn't quite catch you. You dropped out.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's my favorite prequel film, so I'm flipping out about it.
Really?
Yeah.
We'll have to come back to that.
I have a countdown on my phone, and we have 14 days, 4 hours, and 44 minutes.
Woo-hoo!
Nice.
Midnight, I salute you. Are you doing the special screenings that they're doing, that AMC's doing, I heard about?
No, I'm going to be going to a Cinemark theater for a midnight show. So
cool. Yeah. I'd love to do a midnight show. I've never been to a Star Wars movie in the theaters proper. I've only been to the ones at Celebration.
So, oh, really?
Because that's not proper or anything. I mean, that well,
see, when The Phantom Menace came out, that was in '99, and I was actually in high school as a freshman, and I midnight showed it. And so it'll actually be the first Star Wars film that I saw in the theater as a midnight show again. So I'm pretty excited.
That's neat. That's really cool. Okay, Riley, I just sent you the show notes.
Oh, I've got them. I'm just working with the clips.
Okay, good. Well, that's definitely something I am really looking forward to, my first whole Star Wars film in a theater. I really enjoyed watching some of the Star Wars movies at Celebration 5, but it wasn't quite the same as a real theater, and also I never quite caught all of one. I never caught a whole one, so it was a little different there, too. Mark, what about you? Do you think you'll take the kids out and see it?
Oh, definitely. I don't know if my wife's going to want to go. Being as pregnant as she is with little Jaina, she may choose to not sit in the chair all that time. But me and the kids are definitely going. I'm planning on probably going and seeing it opening day so me and Nathan can talk about it for Star Wars Beyond the Films. We're planning on having a little discussion on the awesomeness of 3D and whether or not it's going to be as cool as we're hoping.
Now, is everybody in this call going to see it in 3D? I know we are.
I am. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Teresa?
What?
Oh, do you think you'll see it?
I'm having a technical issue. Okay.
Believe me, I sympathize with you.
We've had a slight Skype malfunction.
We've had a slight,
we're all good now.
We're all good here.
Okay, what are
I was just going to are you going to see it in 3D or in 2D?
No, I'm going to go see it in 3D. I'll probably, if there is a 2D showing, which I don't know if there is, I'm probably going to see both of them.
I think they are. Although I'm not sure. They certainly aren't advertising a 2D showing.
They are. I know that for a fact that they're, for those people who wear glasses or get sick in 3D movies, they want to make sure that it has the broad market that it can have. You know, no reason to exclude people.
Yeah.
Well, then I will go see them both. I'm going to go see the 3D first because honestly, I really want to see the pod race scene in 3D.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing I'm most excited about. But I will go see them both. definitely.
I think I may see it both ways. I'll definitely see it 3D, and we'll either do it on the opening weekend. We haven't talked about it, Bethany. No better time like the present. We thought we could see it. I know opening weekend AMC's doing those special, the Kinect demo and some Star Wars Lego things, and they've got different locations, and they've got a location in Atlanta. It's about a 40-minute drive from where we are now, broadcasting the show from Atlanta, and so we could be here then. However, that's a longer drive. If we wanted to see it midnight, I would just say find a midnight screening. I bet the guys to find out about this stuff would be the 501st in the area.
Yeah, we should ask the local garrison. I really do want to see it in 3D, and I might be tempted to go back and see it in 2D just to see the difference. That would be neat.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't made up my mind.
Well, here's my encouragement for anybody that's listening to make sure you go see it in 3D, because if the Phantom Menace and then Attack of the Clones and stuff do not get the revenue, you know, then they're not going to do the rest of the movies. So if you want to see A New Hope or Empire Strikes Back in 3D, you need to go see the prequels, because they'll cut it.
I wonder what...
That is a good point, Teresa. Very good point. All those that want, you better go now. Even if you hate it, you're going to have to go and drop some dime on this if you want to see your films.
Actually,
they did. They flat out said that if they don't do well, they're not going to put them all in theaters. So
I would
that's
actually
part of the reason why I'm doing it.
Yeah, but Mark, you're taking your kids, and I think this is going to be an interesting phenomenon. If you're one of those people who really doesn't like the prequels or the Phantom Menace or anything, I don't see it. And I'm pretty confident that it's going to make enough money anyway. It's Star Wars, and it's back in theaters. They've really been pushing the promotion on this. I'm going to look up the release date schedule on comingsoon.net, because I'm just curious what it's opening against opening weekend. I haven't looked at this in a while.
Yeah. Chris in the chat says he wonders what exactly the Phantom Menace will have to make for Lucasfilm
to say
it's
numbers?
Worth it.
That's a good question, Chris.
And that's something that it's always very difficult to tell, because I don't know, companies still aren't that open about revenue and that sort of thing in that manner. They're not going to say, well, we have to hit this, because people's expectations will be formed already.
Oh, goodness. Wow. Mark, you're struggling with us. I'm going to have to mute it for a second, Bethany. It's just us. It's just us. Teresa, you can hear us, but I'm afraid we can't hear you. But yes, to your point, Bethany, about the theatrical screenings, there is no number. We don't know what the number should be.
It's
guessing.
Difficult to guess, too.
I mean, the conversion can't have been that much. If it makes 20 million, even if it makes 10 or 15 million opening weekend, which is a good opening weekend, I can see where it wouldn't. That would be plenty. I don't see it not making enough, quite frankly, because let's see, it's opening against Safe House, never heard of it, a bunch of things that are in limited release. So no, the only real competition is Journey to the Mysterious Island with Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah, and that's not... While that Journey movie is directed at kids, The Phantom Menace is really a multi-generation movie. I know people say it's more of a kids' movie than the other Star Wars movies, and it is, but many people like children's movies and children's stories. I mean, look at Disney. They're an example, and I wish Teresa were on for this.
I'm pulling you guys back in. We were dealing with. Let me figure out how to unmute. There we go. They're back.
Yeah,
Mark, can you hear us? Mark, Teresa, can you hear us?
Hello, lady.
Teresa, you're with us. Mark is no longer with us.
I like how somebody in the chat just said Safe House has Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
Denzel Washington.
We were in our
cool.
own little phantom zone.
Hey, Mark, are you with us?
The
Mark?
Phantom Menace got us.
Mark?
That's right.
Hello?
Watch out, it's Darth Plagueis!
I don't think they can hear us. This is horrible. All right, hang on. Guys, can you hear me?
So yeah, I have no idea what you just said, Bethany, but I am sure it was profound. I'm positive of it.
This is horrible. All right, I hung up on both of them.
Okay.
But they can't hear us. But
that
people
was so
in the
weird.
The people in the chat
can hear all of us, right, guys?
No, they could. I was bringing them in and out.
Huh.
Yeah. So what I'm going to do is change it up a little bit, and I'm going to call Teresa.
And then pull Mark in.
And if Teresa comes in. Hey, Teresa.
Hello.
Hey.
Can you hear us?
Yay.
Woohoo. So happy.
All right. You're with us. Mark is not, however. We're dealing
with... He and I were talking about how we got attacked by a fence.
Oh, you guys were coming through. which made for really awesome entertainment. We're just gonna, I completely lost my entire
really
train
funny.
Of thought. wow.
This episode will take a little more editing than usual, which...
No, I'm leaving it. This is gold, I'm telling you. It sounded like... Yeah. Yeah, we just pretend. I'm going to pull Mark Herleman into the call and test my luck. If Mark Herleman joins us, then I will be super pleased.
I'm having a complete conversation with nobody.
Hey, there you are.
Lily, say yes, I are too, if it's me you hear. Because she said yep when I said, say yep if you hear me. And I was like, whoa, they heard me.
Mark.
Well, you hear me, no one else can.
You guys were bleeding through, actually, so... you just couldn't hear us at a time. It was weird. Skype just went berserk, but it seems to be working now.
That was so weird.
Okay. I think we're all good here.
We're all fine.
We're all
Move
fine
along.
Here. We're talking about. Let's get back to. We were talking about the how much money needs to be made, and I was just making the case that it really doesn't need to be that much. I don't think it can have cost that much, and as long as it's cost effective and is a big event for Lucasfilm each year, I can't imagine them not doing it.
I think they want to, if you think about how, you know, Lucas wants people to watch the films 1 through 6. And I think that's the reason that he's releasing Phantom Menace first. And so I think he's trying to push that, you know, and plus, you know, I have an 11-year-old nephew who has seen the movies and he likes the order of 1 through 6.
Yeah.
You know, so I've been actually telling people that are saying, well, I don't know if I'm going to take my kids. I keep saying, it's Star Wars in a theater. How often do you get the chance to show your kids Star Wars
in
a movie theater?
Wait. People are saying that they would go, but they wouldn't take their kids. Why?
No, they're saying they're not sure they want to go and like take their kids to show it to them because they're not sure they want to introduce it to them as 1 through 6.
Okay, I got you.
Oh.
I got
you. Ah. Huh. You know, that does bring up a good point, though, because like you just said, there's a whole generation. Like, my kids are the generation where they're not going to be able to tell you what they watched them. they were watching them while they were in diapers, you know? So it's going to be so hodgepodge. But by doing it this way, you're right. Lucas is almost setting the precedent of, I know I gave you 4, 5, and 6, but I don't care. I'm retconning that. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, then 6.
Yeah. Well, I heard on the Forcecast an interesting a guest that they had, and it was an awesome idea. It was where you could watch 1, then 2, then 4, then 5, then 3, then 6.
Which sounds confusing, but it's actually,
almost the order we watched them in. Actually,
it's very interesting order because your kids don't know the reveal of Darth Vader's Luke's father, and they also don't know the reveal of sister. You have a sister.
So
they're completely shocked.
Those are good points.
Because if you see episode 3 before seeing the original trilogy, you already know that Leia is Luke's sister.
Right, but then again, here's my argument to that, though, is that how important is it for the new generation to have the reveal of that Darth Vader is Luke's father when they get so attached to the Anakin character that they really just want to see the development of him?
True. That would I would be very interested to watch this effect myself, actually.
What are some of the big reveals of the prequels? I'm trying to think out loud here. We've got Palpatine. Palpatine's kind of a gradual thing. There's not a grand moment when you realize he's...
Well,
I guess the grandest moment would be, it's treason then.
Yeah, Nightfall. I mean, watching Anakin do what he did. Even knowing that he was going to fall to the dark side, I cried. I cried all the way through Order 66. It took me a long time to watch those scenes without my eyeballs just tearing up.
Yeah.
You know? And it was just one of those things like you knew something big and bad was going to happen, but when it came down, you were just like, oh, beep.
It was a tragic.
I would say one of the other reveals is the death of Anakin's mom.
Mm.
And what happens
to sad,
him,
yeah.
what that does to him and the effect that has on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. those are two of the biggest moments that come to my mind. There's, I get in Phantom Menace.
Oh, and Fett. Don't forget Boba.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big reveal, too.
It's a big reveal.
Oh, and you know what else? Anakin building C-3PO, because we didn't know that.
Well, those are big reveals, but I'm talking about for the first-time viewer who doesn't know who Boba Fett. You think but yeah, those are both big reveals, but what was that comic that had it?
Palpatine being Sidious. I mean, keep in mind, there were whole legions of fans who thought Palpatine had a twin brother who was Darth Sidious. There were people that just animately like, no, it can't be him.
Wait a minute. Tell me about this. As the young whippersnapper who wasn't aware of this. What was the circumstance there, Mark?
A lot of people, when the movies were coming out, were really convinced that Palpatine was just a regular guy and that Darth Sidious was somebody else and that they were brothers or twin brothers. There was a big theory on them being twins.
That is true. That's very true. I remember that.
That's so weird and also very interesting at the same time.
It makes a little bit of sense.
It makes sense, but it seems weird to me because I never had a chance to think that, you know, the way that we watched it, which was totally crazy, and you can hear it in past episodes if you want to.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because I guess my point is that there are definitely some interesting reveals in the prequels that I think are just as impactful as some of the reveals in the original trilogy. And as a person who watched The Phantom Menace when I was, guess what, Teresa, about 11, then there were moments, even in just The Phantom Menace, we were pulling out Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith moments a lot. But even in The Phantom Menace, knowing about Darth Maul himself, I guess it wasn't really a big reveal, but the moment in that first duel with Qui-Gon, that was actually really unexpected for me, because I knew there would be a big duel at the end because you see all the posters and stuff. You couldn't have avoided it, but I didn't know about that duel, so that one really surprised me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. And I think just the appearance of Darth Maul was pretty interesting because we didn't really know a whole lot about the Sith and all that kind of stuff unless you were a big EU fan, you know? So
yeah.
When that happens and they talk about the rule of two and they say all the stuff that they start talking about in the prequels, it really spawned, in my opinion, a lot of the stuff that has come out, you know, referencing the Sith. So,
oh, absolutely. You know, from the EU standpoint, there wasn't that much about it. And then when the prequels come out, they give you, you know, like a drop of a name here and there, and some things that were kind of referenced before got finalized. But man, after those came out, that's when you started to see this flood of Sith books. I mean, now we got Darth Plagueis, which is perfect time to put that book out right when Episode 1 Phantom Menace hits theaters 3D. I mean, that's a book that changes your perception about a lot of things. And I think that they did a really good job on their marketing with this one. That, you know, if you like the book at all, I think it's going to make watching the films a lot more fun for you if you've read the book.
Yes,
and I think that's just one of those things that they really timed it well.
Yes,
I agree. I think they've really grown the Sith culture, you know, especially with all the Darth Bane books. I mean, those were fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whoa, wow. We're getting a lot of feedback from you, Mark, actually, unfortunately. It's if you can, I think it's the separate computer because of the evil virus attack. So you may have to watch it and mute it there, Mark, on off occasions. But it's there it is. There it is. We'll bear with you. It's unfortunate, but yeah, I'm really looking forward to The Phantom Menace in theaters.
Darth Maul is such an amazing villain. I mean, I know people make fun of him for only having a couple lines, but I really enjoyed having him in that movie, and he made such he was a presence to be reckoned with, even without much dialogue, which, you know, sometimes the quiet characters are the interesting ones.
Oh, Bethany, I agree, because, I mean, he didn't need to speak. There was no reason for him to speak. All he had to do was look at you. You know,
yes.
And just, I mean, that's all he needed, which it makes the books about him so awesome. And especially with the new book out that came out on January 1st, you know, by Ryder Windham. I mean, that's why I'm so excited about the end of season 4 of The Clone Wars, because it's all coming back.
And Sam Witwer is totally playing Darth Maul, and I am totally 100% behind that.
Excited.
I'm just claiming that right now. The twinkle in his eye when we were talking to him at Dragon Con and putting two and two and two and two together
yeah,
two lightsaber blades together.
We can speculate. Even if he can't tell us, we can speculate
That, I'm pretty confident. Sam Witwer's a phenomenal voice actor, so I'm pretty sure he'll do an outstanding job.
Yeah.
He did a great job as the son. I mean, I was already seeing a lot of comparisons between the son and Darth Maul for just weird reasons. So I think it's good that they picked him, because he played a I don't know, dark side oozy type voice very well. And he's always done good as a villain. I feel bad every time I mention him because my wife doesn't like him. And Sam, it's nothing against you, but it's totally at you. You've done such a great job acting that you have sold that you're a bad person. My wife she just sees you, and she just sees all those roles from Battlestar Galactica to Smallville that she's just like, I don't like that guy. And I'm just like, what? He's doing a great job, obviously. I mean,
I think if she met him in person, that would make a difference, because he was really nice. Too.
I'm like, you got to listen to this guy's interview, man. He's just awesome.
Yeah.
Maybe that changed her mind. You'll have to get her to listen to it. Yeah, he was a lot of fun. But yeah, I'm super looking forward to that. Let's talk about George Lucas.
We always have to talk about George Lucas.
He was interviewed. Yeah, absolutely. He was interviewed by Oprah. It's been long hyped. I don't think I've ever seen an interview hyped this much. But I've got two different clips. There are a bunch of different clips on Oprah.com from her interview. But she interviewed him at Skywalker Ranch. Beautiful, beautiful property, by the way. Oh. I remember reading an article where George Lucas paid thousands upon thousands to bury the phone lines out to his property underground and then plant back over them. And I thought, that's pretty awesome. But anyway, George Lucas talks about his career with Oprah. Let's see if this works.
Was there ever a moment you ever thought, oh, it's maybe not worth it, I'm going to give up, it's not going to work? Ever?
No, that's not me. I'm very tenacious.
Not even when you were taken to the hospital and they thought it was heart attack and it wasn't a heart attack?
I did have chest pains, let's put it that way. I wouldn't accept the fact that it was a heart attack, but I did have very, very severe chest pains. And that was, of course, after I came back from England. I'd shot the movie. We were cutting it together. It wasn't going together well. It wasn't looking good. And it wasn't until I took a Saturday off and sort of cut it myself that I realized that it was just the editing, and that's when I got rid of the editor. Mm-hmm. So I had to start all over from scratch. I went down to Industrial Light and Magic. They had one shot. They had 800 shots they were supposed to do. They had spent a year and half of their budget, and they had one shot. So it was flying back from that.
What do you mean one shot? Oh, one shot that worked?
Yeah, one shot that I approved and said, okay, this is good.
Out they had 800?
About they had about
oh my God.
They had another like
wow.
six or seven shots that were terrible.
Oh my goodness.
And that was it.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
wow.
insane.
You're fired.
I would have totally freaked out if I were him. I would have flipped.
I love the moment where
wait, Bethany, hold on. If you were him, imagine those poor people. They're like 800 and you only like one. Oh, man, we're so on the curb. What are we going to tell our wife and kids?
Even in that one
can
minute.
Can you imagine anybody doing that to George Lucas now?
Other
than Hollywood with Red Tails, really?
That would never happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. The only thing I can really compare that to right now is with what's going on in my life and, like, wedding planning. And that would be, like, if somebody came up to me the day of the wedding and said, oh, by the way, we didn't do this.
We lost your ring. Sorry about that. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. That would be horrible.
See, Riley and I
no
have...
No lightsaber hilt.
Riley
no,
and I
no
have...
No lightsaber hilt for your bouquet. Not happening. Sorry.
See, that's why that's not on them. That's on me. I got to find...
You're like, I ain't leaving this up for anybody to hose up. I'm going to have it.
I
love it.
Yeah. I want to talk about something he said right at the beginning that I thought was very interesting, because I've heard a lot of people at different stages claim, people who aren't particular fans of George Lucas, say that he's not actually that good of a filmmaker, and he takes credit for things that he shouldn't have, when it was really the only good thing was The Empire Strikes Back, and that wasn't him, that was Kirshner. And not to take anything away, but it's interesting where he said he got back and didn't like the film, and he re-edited the whole shebang himself. And a lot of people who really dislike George Lucas credit his wife, Marsha, at the time, who did do some editing on the quality of the film. And it basically say, well, it was Macquarie and Marsha Lucas and, you know, it was everybody else. But he's really just a bumbling fool. And I just don't see that. But I thought it was interesting. I didn't know that for sure, that he had to re-edit the whole thing.
And a point on that is you can hear by the way he speaks that he knows what he's talking about.
Well, he called himself tenacious, and I definitely say that's true.
Yes. I mean, it took 23 years to get Red Tails made. That's tenacity for you.
Tenacious G.
I like that.
Well, I mean, the other thing about it, too, is that, you know, in order for him to create all the companies that he created, he has to know what he's talking about because he has to know what he wants. I mean, he's not just going to go, oh, okay, well, here's Industrial Light and Magic that I have nothing to do with.
Yeah, I only built it.
Do stuff. I mean, really?
Yeah, it's... In a way, some people say George Lucas gets too much credit for things, but he is a really good filmmaker. Even if you may say, well, I don't like his script writing. He's still a good filmmaker overall. You know, everybody's going to have one or two things that you just don't like about
what they do.
Some people say George Lucas...
Sorry about that. Continue.
I'm hearing myself somewhere. But yes, it's interesting, and I think everybody will have their little thing that they don't like about Star Wars, one thing or another. I know I have them.
Yep.
But we just got to remember that overall there are things that we really like about Star Wars, and that's why we're here. That's why I'm talking and why you guys are listening and why we keep getting you on the show, because we just love talking about it.
Right. And that's ultimately the point, though, right? Was to create a community and to, you know, have something that people like, that people want to watch. And so regardless of what people say, you know, are they going to go and watch a Star Wars movie if it happens to be on, you know, TV? Yes.
Yeah. I love on Twitter seeing people who say, well, I'm about to do this and such. And then 5 minutes later they tweet, sat down in front of the TV for a second and Star Wars... Thus and such is playing, and I'm hooked for the next 2 hours.
Yep, I'm not moving from this spot.
Yeah. Riley, do we have the next Oprah show?
Not yet.
Well, before we move on, I will say, though, I will be surprised, truly shocked, if the numbers for episode one in 3D are not high. I'm expecting a good turnout. I will really be blown away if they come out completely low. If for one time enough haters got together and said, no, I'm not going, I'm not going to buy this Star Wars product. I hear that all the time, but the numbers always reflect that those guys are saying that out one side of their mouth and going out and handing the money over with the other side of their mouth. So I would be truly surprised if those numbers come back just low.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would be too.
Well, let's talk. I want to briefly, before we go to the next Oprah clip, I was trying to pull them up before, but it didn't work. But let's talk about some of the competition. For the opening weekend for The Phantom Menace, we have Safe House with Denzel Washington and Ryan Reynolds. And this is an R-rated film. It's definitely more adult-oriented.
Oriented.
Thank you. Wow. I'm wondering if I should open my mouth again.
My tongue is fabulous.
My tongue is fabulous.
Oh, goodness. Yes, we're going to quote.
So that's not. I don't see that competing with that. And then, of course, another PG-13 film, The Vow, with Rachel McAdams.
Not really.
Well, she's cool, but
if it was episode two, it would be competition, but not episode one. The big competition is Journey to the Mysterious Island, very loosely based on the. Oh, you have to remind me of the author, Bethany.
Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Author. Why am I blanking?
This is the sequel to the movie, kind of in a sense. I see that they put The Rock in where Brendan Fraser's character was. I don't know if it's like
Jules Verne,
new person, but yeah, it looks interesting. It's definitely a family feel good movie, kind of like the Spy Kids, but come on, Spy Kid type movie. Well, it's got The Rock. Does The Rock have the power of one Darth Maul?
The Rock would be an amazing bounty hunter. I'll tell you that.
Yes,
he would. Oh, that'd be awesome.
Well, the other thing to consider is how many of these movies that are coming out the same day are going to be in 3D?
Now, and The Mysterious Island is also in 3D, and it's the only one. So it's also the only family film and also the only 3D one. So it's going head-to-head It's bald head to horny head in terms of Dwayne Johnson versus Ray Park. Of course, the funny connection there, Dwayne Johnson and Ray Park are both in the upcoming G.I. Joe movie this summer.
That is true.
And,
yes.
Which I can't wait for because, honestly, I am a huge Ray Park fangirl, like, hugely. So,
maybe he'll come to Celebration.
I've met him like 3 times. He remembers me.
Really?
So it's
my biggest fan. I remember you.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Well, I'm not crazy. I'm always like, hey, how are you doing? You know, talking about stuff. And,
yeah, you would be surprised sometimes how often actors and directors and these people recognize you. I mean, they do meet thousands of people, but if you're the one who's polite and nice and appropriate and don't run screaming and jumping into their arms
how many times do we go by the Her Universe booth and see her manager again?
I don't know, but her manager probably remembers us by name. If I had to guess.
So yeah, that's the big competition for the Phantom Menace. Anybody want to make some bets now as to which one will take in more opening weekend? The U.S., not the international. U.S. opening weekend.
I'm going to go Phantom Menace and then probably Safe House and then the Journey movie. Because, you know, a lot of people just don't like The Rock and his new acting stuff.
Really?
So, yeah.
Well, they like G.I. Joe. I know that. But yeah.
Well, they're going to like G.I. Joe because it's G.I. Joe, not because it's got The Rock in it.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess.
I have talked to some people who are kind of disappointed that The Rock plays in these sort of children's movies now. But I've also met other people, families, who love that he's doing this kind of movie now.
I'm one of those that love it. I thought that when he did like movies like The Rundown, you know, he started making fun of himself. I thought that was a really smart move on his part as a wrestler, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think here's my issue is that I was a Rock fan, like with WWE.
Okay.
And so seeing him acting is weird, but I like it.
Okay.
You know, but I liked him better like in The Scorpion King. And then he was okay in whatever the Witch Mountain movie it was.
Escape to Witch Mountain or Return to Witch Mountain.
But I love the Witch Mountain movies because I'm a Disney fanatic, so I had to watch that.
Yeah, that was a good movie. I liked him in Gridiron. I mean, I thought he's done pretty good movies. I loved Fast Five. I thought his character in that was Hoss. That was awesome.
Well, and he's also returning for Fast Five. He's now kind of doing a mix because he had those family films that he was doing for a while, and now he's kind of moved back to more of the he's kind of doing a mix now where he's doing the upcoming Arabian Nights, but he's also doing the upcoming Fast and Furious. And what was that one that he was in recently? Faster, I heard, was a good movie. And that was
haven't seen that yet.
That was a much more serious one. Anyway, back to Star Wars.
Okay.
Me. Yeah. Well, I know I'll never be in as good a shape as The Rock, so oh well.
Or have super cool tech.
Yeah.
Tattoos like that.
No, I don't think I'll be getting the tattoos anytime soon. Although, I will repeat it, he would make an awesome bounty hunter. All right, Lucas. Back to George Lucas, continuing. It's the clip, unfortunately, doesn't want
to
load for me.
Back to the ads.
Nope. There it is.
No ads.
Yes. All right, here we go. Unmute.
We look at movies in our culture now on before Star Wars and after Star Wars. Well, where did you allow yourself to feel that or know that?
It's like being in the center of a hurricane. Mm-hmm. You're in the center. You have no idea what's going on out there. You know, you get a hint. Oh, look, there's people being blown off the thing. Oh, look, there's a boat sinking. But you're in the center of it, so you never see it. The biggest problem I'll have is I never got to see Star Wars. I never got to see it.
What does that mean?
That means I never got the phenomenon. I never walked into a theater like everybody else did and said, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, all I did was get to the end and say, thank God it's over with.
Oh, my goodness. I just had a big aha there. How could you wouldn't?
No.
You never get to see the movie the way we see the movie.
No, you never do.
That, to me, is an incredible glimpse at what it must be like to be George Lucas. People really like George Lucas or they really don't like George Lucas or somewhere in between. But I think it's very difficult to try to step into someone's shoes like that. It's a very unusual position in life to be in. And to approach a movie from that direction is so different than to approach it as a viewer, as someone who's being entertained or inspired.
Yeah.
I think it's true of all filmmakers, though. I mean, think about it. They work so long and so hard on their films, and you never really think about the fact that they don't get to see it the way we do. They may go to their premieres, but it's not the same because they know everything, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of those things because, you know, I used to make some little run-me-down high school movies and stuff. But for the movie-making side of things, there's a whole different kick of watching people's reactions to it. So, I mean, there's, I guess, a little trade-off there for him. I mean, yeah, he's never going to experience it. But at the same time, he's the one person that made so many people smile. And that's got to be something for your ego.
Yes. At the same time, though, you hear people who are very vocal in their dislike. I mean, you hear that the internet brings out the troll in us, the anonymous troll when we're in a bad mood. So at the same time, you've got sort of this double two-edged sword, and it's very nice on one side. The other side is definitely dripping with blood.
Teresa.
Yes.
Oh, I'd love to ask you some questions as we kind of continue and are coming towards the close of the show. I wanted to definitely kind of interview you and talk about you and what you do. So let me ask you the first question. How did you first start the Fangirl Next Door idea, and what is your elevator pitch? What is it that you do over there?
Well, I had my blog for several years, but I came to a standstill because I said to myself, well, I don't know what I'm going to write. And then one day, it was just like, you know what? I'm going to write about what I know. And what I know is Star Wars and fantasy and sci-fi and toy collecting and all those kind of things. And that's what I know. So I decided to start writing. And so I started writing more. Well, around that same time, I guess back in the first season of The Clone Wars is when Ashley Eckstein started getting bigger. And she started promoting being a fangirl. And I started thinking about it. And I said, well, that's me. You know, I have a voice that's talking about the same kind of stuff. And so I sort of moved it into the whole idea of what it's like to be a girl in the world of fandom and not just with Star Wars. You know, like right now, if you go to my blog, it is all Disney related, which you guys know why. And I can tell everybody that's listening later. But so that's kind of where it came from. And so When I'm talking about it, I talk about how I want to talk about what it is to be a fan, regardless of if you're a girl or if you're a girl or a boy, but what it is to be a fan, really, and to share how I feel about all that kind of stuff coming from, hence the title is Fangirl Next Door, because, you know, I'm the girl next door. I'm the girl in t-shirt and jeans that plays video games and builds Legos and does all that kind of stuff, you know?
How did you come to be the girl who plays video games and likes playing with Lego and likes watching Star Wars and likes doing all of what some people would stereotypically call guy things?
I had an older brother, and so I kind of just did a lot of the stuff that he did. I played a lot of sports and those kind of things, and I think I just didn't really fit in with the girly girl friends of mine at school. Mm-hmm. And the stuff that I liked was playing video games with my brother and, you know, playing G.I. Joes and building Legos when I was a kid and just sitting around and watching movies. I've always been a movie person, always. So I think a lot of it actually came from my mom. She's more girly than I am, but she never really pushed that on me, you know. And so the only Barbies I ever had were the Teresa Barbies because the Hispanic Barbie has my name and it's spelled the same way. So I had those and, you know, I just kind of, I don't know. It's always just been inside of me. And then what I read a lot of fantasy. And so that just kind of put more fuel to the fire.
Mm-hmm. Where did this start? Is it a recent thing for you where you kind of identified yourself as a quote unquote fangirl? Because it's a term that's really come to proliferation. It's really become more common now in the past couple of years, and I think Ashley Eckstein's definitely been a part of that movement.
Oh, she definitely has. And if you have listened to my podcast or the one I just put out, well, I didn't just put it out. It's been a couple months now, but I credit her for a lot of where we are today and the fact that there's a lot of girls out there that are willing to speak up and say, well, hey, I'm a Star Wars fan. And it's a lot has to do with her. The term fangirl, I guess I never really knew that it was a term we could use, because I was like, well, I'm a fan, I'm not a boy, but, you know, I guess I'll be a fanboy. You know, well, and so, you know, so it was like, I don't know. And then when she started really promoting the term of saying fangirls, I was like, well, that makes sense. So,
yeah,
you just needed somebody to pioneer it, you know, because if I was saying it myself, I'd probably just have people looking at me like I'm crazy, which wouldn't be normal, but still, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know what they say, it's chic to be geek.
There we go. That's what I say.
It's a changed world, yeah, definitely. And I remember, let me ask you this. Are you planning to go to a celebration this year?
So here's the kicker on that. With what I do
job. What you need to realize, the answer is yes.
Yeah. you guys have to think about what's happening in July.
I know.
So I really want to go, and I'm have been planning on going, but... For everybody that's listening, I'm getting married in July, and we're getting married at Disney World.
That's a miserable excuse.
So I'm going to have already been there the month before. And then, like I said, with what I do for a job, I work with high school sports. And as everybody knows, if you don't know, Texas football is huge. And Texas football starts around the same time. So I just kind of have to – I need to kind of do some logistics. But I want to be there. Because I've had some talks about, you know, possibly doing some panels and stuff like that. So hopefully I can go so that I can do that, which would be great. So.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
How did you come to be introduced to the world of Star Wars?
My mom. My mom. When I had chicken pox, I forget how old I was, I had oven mitts on my hands that were taped to my hands, and I was hungry, and so she put me on the couch and she made me pancakes, and she put the plate in front of me and like on a little tray, and so I couldn't get up, and she put in Star Wars, and that's all I watched that day because I had chicken pox and I couldn't do anything about it. And so there we go.
Do you have any memories of your first impressions?
I watched Return of the Jedi first, and I fell in love with the Ewoks, which is why Wicket is my favorite character. And I just fell in love with that movie. And I remember watching it, and I remember when I saw that Vader was Luke's father, it wasn't as big of a moment for me as it was for other people, because I looked at my mom and I just said, really? Huh? You know, and so then she told me a story about how she went to the movie theater and how big it was and all this kind of stuff. And then I think the biggest one for me was finding out about Luke and Leia being brother and sister, because I could always tell that there was something, you know, there was something. And so when that happened, I was like, well, that makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah.
Everything is right in the world again.
Well, I'm just trying. I'm. It's amazing to me. It's always. I love these stories of how you were first introduced, and everyone has their own unique one. Kind of going back to the first introduction theme. When did you first get into the online community, and then actually get to start meeting people in person? That wasn't. Was it before this past October? Was it before?
It was before. Okay. It was before. I started sort of building that network. Probably about a year before. And I had been trying to figure out, okay, how can I do this? How can I write and, you know, get some stuff out? And I'm a writer naturally, so I was like, how can I do this? And actually the avenue that helped the most was Twitter. Twitter helped a lot, because I was able to network with a lot, like with Eric Geller from TheForce.net and a bunch of other people. Thus, I became friends with them. And then we, you know, met up and all that kind of stuff. I actually met Eric at Star Wars Fan Days for the first time.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. And so he and I had a blast, and I met several other people. But, you know, it was Twitter, honestly, that really, really sparked
the growth. It's crazy. It's crazy how social media – I didn't know you on Twitter personally before before the Fan Days, but it was during Fan Days that I was hanging out with a bunch of my friends who knew you on Twitter. And, you know, so it was this strange mix of both in-person meeting and networking and social networking. online social media that just kind of led to us meeting. It's crazy how all that worked out.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And what was weird about Fan Days was that people were introducing me, and they were introducing me by my, you know,
Twitter handle.
Actual name. No, my actual name.
Oh, really?
And then people would look at me, and then they'd say, oh, well, you're Ice Cold Penguin. And I said, yes, I am. And I'm like, that's so weird. So if you're looking for me on Twitter, it's at Ice Cold Penguin.
Nice.
Which is a whole story about why I have that screen name in and of itself.
We'll have to save that for time number two as we come into the closing of the show. But it's an absolute pleasure to talk to you, Teresa. And we'll have to definitely get you guys back on. And I hear we'll have to get on your podcast sometime.
Yeah, we need to do that.
Besides Twitter, where can folks find your website?
You can go to www.fangirlnextdoor.com.
Awesome. And I will do that as soon as this show's over. I'm doing it right now. You can do the rest of the show, Bethany. I'm done. No. And you can also go to our website, StarWarsReport.com. That's where you're going to find our Facebook, our Twitter. It's just Star Wars Report. Super easy to find us. You can find us on iTunes. Hey, leave us a rating. Some more folks have been doing that, and we really do appreciate you guys reviewing us in a public format and letting other people know that you're listening to the show. We've got some emails coming up after the music, and that will be in the podcast version, but it will not be in this as you hear this re-airing throughout the week on Middle Earth Network Radio. So you'll have to, if you're hearing this on the radio, you'll have to check out our iTunes feed and listen to the whole version on the podcast. So we've got an awesome email from Andrew Halliday after this. But that's going to do it for this episode. Once again, thanks, Teresa, Mark, Bethany. Had a great time tonight. And, we've got some really cool stuff happening. And we'll talk a little bit about that after this, the music. But that's going to do it for this episode. Stick around for the emails afterwards. And also remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast. All right. Let's get into some emails. Teresa, you're welcome to stick around a little bit as we close out with this really this long but awesome email from Andrew.
Sure.
All right. Let me find it here. All right. Andrew, this is from Andrew Halliday from U Cantina. He writes us in great and awesome length. He says, "Hello, Riley, Bethany, and Mark. I just listened to episode 29, couldn't agree more about your main points. I find it irritating when people go on rants about hating something that they chose to pay good money for, despite knowing full well that they wouldn't like it. That said, I do occasionally find enjoyment in watching something just to laugh at it. I went with my wife and her friends to see Breaking Dawn when it came out." Oh no, here we go. Some of us enjoyed the movie by way of laughing at it. For example, to compare it to how often Jacob says things that remind me of the Incredible Hulk. "Don't make me angry, vampire." You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. He goes on to say, I think there's something to be said for getting entertainment from how bad something is. But this is distinct from just hating. I never regret paying $10 to see a movie for the purpose of laughing at it. That's the key. I think regret over paying for it. He goes on to say, "But I have a question I want to run past you guys. During episode 29, Mark referred to the, quote, shippers when talking about some fans who interpreted the slightest bit of flirting between Ahsoka and Lux Bonteri as romance. I wanted to ask you guys a question about shipping. Whether you read Fate of the Jedi books or not, you've probably heard about the Sith apprentice Vestara Kai." Oh, yes, I have.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely have. The same age as Ben Skywalker. She is very analogous to Mara Jade. Mara Jade. I'm sorry. Oh, no. I just angered all of you. Mara Jade. I'm sorry. Says, "There's evidence, both subtle and overt, about a budding romance between the two. When you wish upon a star. Okay, anyway. The last book in the series, Apocalypse, is not yet out, so it is unclear how it will get resolved, but many people believe that Vestara will marry Ben, and the two will be parents of, or most likely grandparents of Cole Skywalker. Bring me the head of Skywalker! That's not in the email.
Dun, 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 dun.
What is your take on the subject? I believe it's unreasonable to say that Ben and Vestara will end up together at this stage. Oh, no. Big word. $10 word. Ben's... Oh, no. Bethany.
Oedipus.
Oedipus?
Oedipus.
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 Howdy there. I'm Oedipus Tex.
Yes.
You may have heard exactly. of my sister, Rex. Anyway. Complex. Anyway, complex aside, I just think it's too early to tell. Question for Mark, to my knowledge, the only Star Wars host who is married, although that may change here in July. how old were you when you met your wife? Well, we can pose this question to two people on the panel now. How old were you when you met your wife? Statistically, I guess you were not 16. And if you were, it's either a rare exception or there were other extenuating circumstances. I met my wife a few days before I turned 22, and we got married at the age of 24. And that's young for these days. Jaina Solo and Jagged Fail's courtship is more realistic with them engaged at about age 34 or so. What is your take? What say you, Star Wars Report host? Thanks, love the show. Andrew. And shameless plug, which... There's no such thing as a shameless plug. We welcome plugs here, Andrew. He's the author of the Star Wars Dissection columns on EUCantina.net. Awesome, awesome work he does there, by the way.
That's right.
I'm going to throw this to you first, Mark, as the old married man on the panel, and as somebody who can kind of speak to this experience, who's also read Fate of the Jedi up to this point. What is your take, sir?
Yeah. Well, first I'll address the shippers part. You know, I'm one of those that the moment Vestara kind of arose on the scene, I kind of saw them going this direction. I was one of those that was like, oh, wouldn't that be neat if Ben Skywalker and Vestara got together and turns out Cade's got some Sith blood in his line? You know, thinking of it as a
more
partner.
Sith blood.
And immediately people were like, oh, no, that would just be terrible. And then the book series has kind of gone that route. I personally, though, I think if they do decide to lash them down in that route, I like them to go more like the way Mara and Luke did, where it's kind of not just in one series, that it's drug out a little bit, that, you know, the whole romance doesn't just bam, it's over and oh wow, come next series, they're already married. You know, I wouldn't like to see that, but I did see it going that way, and I kind of was hoping for that. I think it would be interesting for Cole and Cade Skywalker down the line if their great-great-grandma or their great-grandma or their grandma was Sith at one point. Now, as for my wife, I met my wife when we were 19. We were the same age. We were really good friends, and that was about it. And then about 2 years into our friendship, we fell for each other. Well, she liked me from the get-go, so I should say she wore me down. But we got married when we were 22. So, yeah, okay. We weren't in our teens when it happened. But, I mean, we were in our teens when we met, but – you know, it was the end of the teens.
Well, if there's one precedence that the Star Wars Expanded Universe sets, is that is our the Skywalkers tend to have a number of different love interests before they finally settle down. That's the one
True
thing
that.
I've noticed. And it does seem a little bit young. I can kind of speak to this. I read the first three Fate of the Jedi novels, and there was definitely a lot of flirtation there, but not really the kind of chemistry that's between a character like Mara and Luke.
I'm entirely caught up minus Ascension. So I have Ascension and Apocalypse left for me. And I would say that their relationship does develop further, but it definitely has its rocky moments. And Vestara is really just kind of torn between what she wants to do, I think. Because I think a part of her really does like Ben, but she was born and raised a Sith. So I think she's just kind of teetering on the edge of, do I really want to go back to the light side, or do I just want to keep trying to trick everyone and stay here on the dark side? And like Nathan Butler so aptly put it, do I want the brown robe or the black robe?
Well, there's definitely a lot at stake here, you know, with her relationship. I mean, it's not just her and Ben, but it's also her life. Her life based off this relationship in the series, it kind of hinges on to what she's going to do as to where her character's going to go. So I'm curious either way to see where the series goes with it.
Well,
right. I mean, I'm caught up too.
These decisions for her affect her far more drastically than they will Ben, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
It's very life or death for her, whereas for Ben, it's choice of a love life. What do you think, Teresa, since you've been caught up?
I'm caught up too. I think that they actually did a really good job of making this particular love story more realistic. You know, it's not a fantasy love story. It's not something that just kind of happens. You know, there's a lot
of
there's a lot of, you know, well, if this happens and this happens, and, you know, there's some risk involved, you know, and I think that that makes it more interesting, at least to me. You know, mm-hmm. it hits home more when you can, in a fantasy world or a sci-fi world, you can see a relationship that you may want to happen, but you're not sure if it can.
Yeah.
You know? Well, I will say this, having...
Very good point.
Having read the first three... And as a sometime critic of Fate of the Jedi, that was the one subplot that I was really one of two subplots that I was really enjoying was the subplot of the Jedi going crazy and the mystery there and the finesse with which the authors handled it from the Jedi's perspective when they would go into that first person perspective of the insane Jedi. I would buy it. I'm like, oh goodness, they're really fake. What happened? Some Jedi's trapped in a Sith contraption or something. But of course that turned out not to be true. And they kind of, I loved the way they dangled that in front of you. There's no way of knowing whether or not it was true for those first book or two.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that plot.
I agree.
And I loved the Sith plot. That would be number two. And I liked the Vestara Kai Ben dynamic and the whole idea of the lost tribe of the Sith. I like mm-hmm. that a lot. It was just a little bit, because I'm an impatient person and have a hard time reading sometimes, I had a hard time overcoming the parts of the book that I wasn't as invested in to overcome that. And it was about the time when the plot of the crazy Jedi and Abeloth kind of took a twist. I'll try not to spoil too much, but it kind of took a twist midway through the series. That was when it kind of the main hook for me wasn't there anymore, I guess. Yeah, see what I'm saying at all? Does that make any sense?
I feel you.
I think this series is a series that I think it's not there for the casual reader, that's for sure. If you're just a casual reader that's looking for a story, you don't want to read Fate of the Jedi. Fate of the Jedi really is going to require, you know, people that really want to read, invest the time, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, precisely. The investment there. I mean, when I think about the people that really don't like that series, the thing I like it because of the fact that I went from the New Jedi Order all the way up through. And, you know, each next series, I wasn't happy with everything that came, but it built off each other. It kept going forward. And I liked, I don't know, I just like knowing what's going to happen next. I mean, even if it doesn't happen the way I liked it to go, I'm still excited about it. So I've been following along. It hasn't been terrible for me. There have been good things in each series, but it hasn't been New Jedi Order all the way. And you're right in the aspect of it is an investment if you want to read these and really get any benefit out of it.
Well,
you can read it, but, you know, like Riley's discovering, if you're not quite ready to read it, it's not going to be as good a book for you.
Yeah.
Well, right.
On from my perspective, it's if they do take that point and Vestara and Ben do continue the Skywalker line and it begins to tie with the Legacy series, that's a plot that I am vested in. I am very interested in the Legacy era, and I really liked the way the Legacy comics handled it. And I think that's because I'm not as much of a Big Three guy as you are, Mark, and I think that might have something to do with it.
That could be, but see, it's not just the Big Three for me. I mean, I'm liking everything this direction. I like Han and Leia's kids. You know, I like Luke's kid. I want to know more as a story, but I'm that way with any direction. You throw me back in the Tor era and I want to know more there too. I'm just one of those fans that I don't know, by giving you more of the mystery and revealing the mystery, I think that adds mystery. And so, you know, I'm like excited every time they give me something new. So I don't know. That's where I come from. Because like I read books like Choices of One, and I mean, I haven't got that far in it yet, but I find those ones more boring because I already know what's going to happen to Luke and Leia and all them. So I don't find that one as – I'm not as excited for the big three in those books as I am, say, in the legacy of the books. There's more risk involved for the character in these books than there is for the other one, you know, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
No, it does make sense. I think that's part of the reason that I really like a lot of the comic book series, because the comic books really branch out, you know. And the first time we ever met my favorite Jedi, Aayla Secura, is in comic books. You know, I mean, and it's just, that's a whole nother aspect of it, you know?
Yeah.
No, I hear you, because it's nice to know there's someone else out there reading the comics, because that's how I am. I'm always like, ooh, who's this character? You know, like we got the Verpin Jedi that was just mentioned once or twice in like one panel, and now he's, you know, starring in Dark Times at the moment. You know, I dig that kind of stuff.
Cool. Yeah, we just need what was the Hutt Jedi that was in one of the comics?
Eldoran.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I think secretly the bartender in the most recent Clone Wars episode was an undercover Jedi as well.
That was a cool looking slug slash snake.
We'll talk some Clone Wars on the next episode, I think. We're going to have a lot to be talking about over the next few weeks. I'm super excited. But I think we'll cut it short. We'll end this episode. Guys, be sure to tune back in every Thursday night on Middle Earth Network Radio. And thank you, Andrew, for emailing us in. We really appreciate that. So I'll say it once again. Remember the Bothans. So long, folks.